Empower Radio presents Art as Worship with Vanessa Lowry.
Welcome to Art as Worship. Each week, we feature stories of artists and explore their process of creation. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowry, and I'm thankful that you're joining me. On this show, I talk with artists of various faiths, working in a wide range of mediums, on the common theme of how they use inspiration and creativity as an expression of their spirituality. Learn how their art is an expression of their own connection to however they name God, Jehovah, Allah, Source, the universe, the great mystery, or something else. My hope is that these stories will inspire your creative efforts and your own spiritual expression. My guest today is Vivine Lizanga, who's been a tattoo icon for more than 40 years. She began tattooing in 1972 and has had a shop in the famous historic Pike Place Market in Seattle, Washington since 1989. She is world-renowned for her art and has garnered many awards over the years. For much of that time, she worked alone, but in recent years, she's brought together a small crew of talented artists to create a safe and inviting environment where clients can get beautiful custom tattoo work. When Vivine began tattooing, there were very few women who had tattoos, not to mention who were working as tattoo artists. Her work opened many doors for women in the tattoo industry and is still seen as an example of a fine artist working in the tattoo medium. Welcome, Vivine.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you for being on the show. And I know that that in the bio we talked about your work as a tattoo artist. How did you get interested in that as an art medium?
Well, it was in the early 70s. I've always done arts and crafts kind of things. And I guess the tattoo muse struck me when I had first seen an article on tattooing in some men's magazine. And there was an article on Cliff Raven, and it showed his work, and it was so un-tattoo-like, it just really struck me that you could create beautiful works of art in very untraditional ways, or through the different kinds of imagery. So I set out to find myself a tattoo artist so I could get my own tattoo. But at that time, there weren't any tattooers around, and the one shop that was in Seattle that Zeke Owen owned for several years, he quit and moved to North Carolina, so there was nobody in town. And then I went to this other seaport called Bremerton, and there was nobody there. So then I went to Tacoma, and there was a tattoo shop there run by this cute little couple named Professor Rex and his wife Brenda. They had a very traditional, nice, neat, clean tattoo shop. So I was really excited to find them. And that's where I got my first tattoo. And after that, it was just the beginning of something new in my life. So for that first summer, I just kept doing what I always did. I think I was working in a drapery factory or something. I don't know. But shortly after I got my tattoo at the end of summer, this old retired cleanman had opened up a tattoo shop in Seattle. So I found out about it, and I went down there to talk to him to see if I could be his helper-outer. And his name was C.J. Danny Danzel. He was like a retired seaman. He worked at retired from Foss Tugboat Company as a cook, and he spent his whole life tattooing. Mostly during the war and then after the war, part-time. And then he worked at Foss Tugboat Company. But he was really one of the last of the old-timer type tattoo shops around. So I was pretty fortunate to be a part of that, part of history.
So how did you decide?
I know that's how I got started.
I know a lot of people have a lot of meaning behind the tattoos that they get. How did that work for you with the tattoos that you've gotten over the years? I know that you've had many tattoos and some very large tattoos now. What were the meanings? How did that meaning connect to the tattoos that you chose to have done on your body?
When I first got my first tattoo, it was the old school style where you went in and picked something off the wall. And I really didn't want something on my arm, but I wound up getting something on my arm anyway because there was no privacy rooms or anything like that, so I couldn't get it any other place except on my arm, pretty much. So And instead of getting a rose or something like that that was more feminine, I decided to get a skull with bat wings because I thought, oh, that looks really kind of occult and mysterious. But later on, I found out that whenever I'd be like out in public, like taking the bus to work or something, these young hoodlums would try to pick a fight with me because I thought I was tough. It's like, oh no, I'm going to cover that up from now on. I lived with that for several years. Later on, I had it covered over because I just couldn't take, you know, how other people viewed me in the public eye. But through time, things began to change. It was a huge revolution back then because I think most people that got tattoos, they never really, I mean, in their own way, they would think about what was symbolic for them, but also it was a different era. Things were very much more traditional, and you didn't have that many choices, and people really didn't have to think too much about, you know, what they got on their bodies. They would just come into the shop and pick, pretty much. But when I started working for Danny, I started to change all that. I created my own flash. That flash is like imagery that you get for your tattoo work. So I did that in my spare time, and then I would begin to do other kinds of images rather than just the old traditional style. So, yeah, it was a completely new kind of era that began. It was actually the beginning of the tattoo renaissance.
Well, and I know that tattoos are much more acceptable now than they were when you started tattooing and when you started getting tattoos, and so I see people all the time that have tattoos, and I love to ask them the stories behind, you know, why they got a particular tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that you do a lot of cover-up tattoos. You do a lot of cover-ups for mastectomy scars and that kind of thing. Can you tell me how that kind of came about?
It just sort of happened organically through time, because in the 80s, every once in a while I would do like a scar cover-up or a mastectomy cover-up, but it never really started to take hold until recently. And it's probably because more people are having their mastectomies done, and more women at a younger age are having to deal with it. So it just kind of happened naturally, and I love doing it. It just happened naturally.
So when the women come to you and want to have a cover-up for a scar, what is the process of how they work with you to do that?
Well, you know, when you're dealing with the public, it's kind of like they, most of the time they don't have too much of an imagination. What they see is what informs them and educates them. So it's, I think the trick is to help them open up their mind and of the possibilities that exist. And I think the hardest part is not to get stuck into a rut or into just doing a theme. But even if I do a theme, I try to make what I do original so that, you know, I don't copy, do things twice or repeat things. I always have like fresh kind of motifs that I can do for them. But you're really only limited by your imagination. And I think that's the hard part for the public. And that's the hard part for me, is trying to dig into their psyche or their subconscious and bring it out into the open where they can recognize what those imagery and all the possibilities could be. So that part is not an easy process.
Well, and I so admire the art of tattooing, and I think it's amazing that you work on this medium that moves, and that the subject that you're working on, you know, might jump, and that there's, you know, this always a different medium, even though you're working on skin all the time.
Yeah, it's, you know, there are so many different kinds of mediums, but I think the thing that really struck me about tattooing is that it's its permanency. and that you're not allowed any errors. And of course, no one's perfect. There's always going to be errors, but I think with the expertise, you can always work with that and, change it into something so that no one knows, or it just changes it into something where it's still going to be beautiful. But it's very unrelenting when it comes to that, the whole thing of how the skin takes the ink and the technique. And, I mean, just learning the technique can take you at least 10 years. It's not an easy process. And I know no medium is easy, like watercolor or oil painting or whatever you choose. It just takes a while to master your medium, no matter what it is. But it's so much more precious because it is on skin.
Right.
And then, your body takes its toll, too. It's like the life range of a tattooer is not probably going to be that of an oil painter or a watercolorist, just because you're working like a dentist where you're all bent over and you get into these weird, quirky stances where it takes its toll on your shoulders and neck and arm. And, I think that's why I had to have my hip replaced, because just the sitting in weird positions for too many years.
A lot of cultures give a lot of spiritual significance to tattoos. Can you describe a little bit about different cultures and how tattooing has been a part of their spiritual beliefs in a culture?
So much of it is like pagan around the world, different kinds of primitive cultures. It's very earthy and intuitive, and each culture has their own specific imagery that they use and their rituals. And I know in Thailand they have their special imagery that protects you. It's very spiritual. It's like holy words and images and things that protect the body. And I'm not really all that familiar. I know what their imagery looks like, but I don't know what it means or anything.
Right.
But, so I guess the common denominator with each culture is that, to them it is a spiritual thing and a sacred thing, and they have their own sacred rites as passages that they go through. Even the Japanese yakuza, it's like they have their codes of honor and ways of behavior and their secret society where you have to kind of be introduced to the tattoo artist. I know that that's changing a lot too in Japan, but decades, it was like a specific way in their culture. And to me, the Japanese style was like at its height during the Yukui period, the 1800s, and it just kind of filtered over into the later centuries as a kind of an underground art form where only, the chosen people, the yakuza, could really participate in that. Of course, a lot of that's changing now, but I always found it very fascinating because they took the craft and the art of tattooing to new heights. Well, not new heights, but they created it in such a way so that they would do these elaborate mythological stories of heroes and heroines and ghosts and different things that pertain to their culture. And they would do like a tapestry or a painting, in a way, layer upon layer of things that interwove with each other that no one in the West has ever seen before. And that part was what was so exciting about that introduction to the Japanese style in the late 60s, early 70s, because people in the West had never seen any work like that before. And I got to be a part of that. And Sailor Jerry was like a big proponent of that, I mean, sure, people are familiar with all of his little kind of kitschy style tattoos, but I don't think that many people know that he was like the big person that introduced Japanese style tattooing to the West. And then later on, other people became known, other Japanese artists like Oguri and Nakano. They were like the two big ones in Japan at that time. And then later on, other people in the West began to kind of imitate the Japanese style. So that was like a big inspiration for me. And I got to read letters that that Sailor Jerry would write to my teacher, Danny, and I would just be in awe of it. And he would send his flash designs to Danny and pictures of his big work and, you know, like big dragons wrapping around a female's body. And I would just stand there with my mouth open. It's like, whoa, I want to do that kind of work.
It was pretty amazing. It sounds like tattoo artists, that it's a very collaborative type of community, that you all share ideas and build on one another's styles to create your own style.
I guess it's like any other kind of art, you know, where they say that the best kind of flattery is when you copy other people's, other great artists' works and everything. That's kind of a given. But we do have communities where people share and we do projects together, and it's pretty nice. But I have to say that it's different being a female. I mean, it's not good or bad, it's just different. It's like, I think the male community, tattoo community, tends to have this inherent thing built into their genealogy where they're better able to share and network. I mean, that's just my observation. There hasn't been that many female tattooers around to collaborate with anyway, and we usually live so far apart that it hasn't been conducive for that kind of sharing. But I don't know. I try to stay in there and network and see what other people are doing as much as I can.
So how does your spirituality find expression in your art of tattooing?
I think there's no separation, really. It just is what it is. It's hard to describe because it's so subjective. And I think the big part of it is just being aware and trying to be aware of the person that you're working on, that you're collaborating with. Trying to be in tune with their needs, and they're also, you know, being able to create something that's visually creative and exciting for them. And it's not always a 100% thing either. Sometimes I will get stuck, and then when I do get stuck at the drawing board, I'll just leave it for later on, move on to a different project, and then usually if I let it go and then come back later on, it tends to work itself out. But the spirituality part, I think it's kind of like a day-to-day experience or a day-to-day challenge, where I think my days go easier if I take that few minutes out every day just to pray or meditate or whatever you want to call it. And then sometimes when I'm working on someone during the day, I do that too. I'm usually pretty quiet, and because I'm in the zone, I don't know, different kind of alpha state, I guess. But sometimes when I'm working and I'm quiet, I just kind of go into that space.
So do you have any kind of a specific process or ritual that you do when you start to work with a client?
Well, first of all, I'll do a consultation with them and gather up as much information as I can. And then if I feel like I need to talk to them again, I'll call them or, you know, get more information out of them. But it is a collaborative process. And so sometimes the first consultation it's okay, but it's just kind of like a process of gathering up information. So I might have to talk to him one or two times to kind of figure out where I'm headed with my art.
And I've got a friend who's got a big back piece, and it's something that, you know, he's continually having. I mean, they've got an overall structure for it, but it's being continually added to. Do you find that that's a lot of the work that you're doing is the bigger pieces, or do you like doing the smaller pieces that are more, you know, people come in and you finish the piece in one setting?
Well, I did so much of that, the smaller work early on in my career, and now I seem to do mostly larger pieces. And so often I'll get someone who get, you know, they'll get a piece and then they want to add on to it and add on to it. And that seems to be the challenge, because when you are creating that way a permanent piece of artwork, sometimes the cohesiveness of the design work isn't as I would like it to be as if I sat down and drew the whole thing out in one piece. So, you know, I guess it would be like working on someone's house and doing repair work, and then you find out you have to add on, do more and do more. It's easier just to do the whole thing as one piece. You run into less problems that way. And when I'm designing for someone, it's easier to create the whole thing as one piece rather than later on trying to add on to it. So it's not as forgiving design-wise when you do it like that.
Well, I would think you would also start to run out of space.
I enjoy doing big pieces, though.
So when somebody's wanting you to add on to a piece, do you typically show them a couple of ideas on paper before, and for them to choose which direction they want to go with, or how does that work for you?
Yes, I usually do everything on paper first so they can take a look at it. Most of the time it works out pretty well. Sometimes I have to go back to a drawing board, but that's all part of it.
So when someone comes to you, what is typically the time frame? I mean, is it the initial consultation, and then how much time is it before you actually present the ideas for their tattoo and then actually do the work?
Depends on how many people I have waiting for design work, because when I'm designing, that's the part they no one ever sees. I'm at home gathering up information and putting stuff together and then maybe throwing it out and starting over. But if I have a lot of people waiting to have their design work done, it might take a few months just because I have a large waiting list.
So what are the restrictions as far as the space that you're working in when you're designing? Do you work larger and then shrink it down, or do you try to design for that specific space and size?
Usually I try to design to fit the part of the body that it's going on instead of just designing a design and sticking it on the body. And I've always done it like that. Usually my designs wind up bigger than what they want, so I usually wind up shrinking it down a little bit. But that's how I work.
So what are some of the challenges of particular parts of the body?
Oh, there's lots of challenges. Especially around the waist where the skin stretches out. And on some people, it takes a lot of strength. And no matter how hard you stretch it, the skin is like an elastic band and it still wants to snap back. So I use a lot of my strength with my left arm and shoulder to try to stretch that skin out. And it takes a lot out of me sometimes. And then sometimes you never know if, because of the loose skin, everyone's different, that the skin is a lot thinner and there's no way to tell. So you're like going along doing a line, all of a sudden the line changes and it's like, oh God, holy crap. It's like, oh, that line is like blowing out. What happened? And it's because the skin all of a sudden got really thin. And so that part is a challenge, but usually I can correct it. but it always gets you when you least expect.
And then you really have to use your creativity to overcome that, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. There's always a way. There's always a way around that.
So I.
But if you're not experienced, you're not going to know what to do.
So one of the advantages of working with someone that's got the years of experience that you have is you've encountered lots of different types of skin and lots of different challenges.
Yes, that's right.
So how do our listeners find you and find out more about your work?
Well, right now I have my website, and that is kind of a long name, but it's MadameLozongasTattoo.com.
And then
I have my Facebook. I have like three names on Facebook.
So what's the best one for people to connect with you on Facebook?
I have, well, I guess Vivine Lozonga. That's the easiest one. And it's spelled V-Y-V-Y-N. And then my last name is L-A-Z-O-N-G-A. So you can reach me through there.
That's great. Is there any last thing that you would like to tell our listeners today before we wrap up?
Oh, I don't have any idea. I wouldn't know what to tell them. Just look me up on my website and my Facebook.
So if somebody was thinking about getting a tattoo, what's a piece of advice that you would give them?
To really think about the imagery that they want to get, what it means to them, and be careful. Look up, research your tattooer and the work that they do and their ethics and style, all of it. So, and also, not to think that you're going to come in and get a really large piece in just an hour, because last year I got so frustrated with the public coming in thinking they could get a back piece in one day or a full sleeve in a few hours. I had to print out a little thing and put it up at my front desk stating how long things take and how much they cost, because I think the public got a lot of misinformation by watching these tattoo shows on TV. And so they would come in, I don't think they would believe me. It's like they thought I was lying to them. But so after I put that up, I think that helped to re-educate the public. Like, no, you're not going to get something really large. It's not going to be done like they do it on TV. So
right.
As long as they know that, it's going to be just fine.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And it really has been fascinating for me, and I am so grateful that you were able to be on the show. Tell our listeners one more time how they can get in touch with your find your website and get in touch with you.
You can reach me on my website, and it's Madame Lozonga. It's M-A-D-A-M-E Lozonga, L-A-Z-O-N-G-A .com. And then I have my name on Facebook.
Great.
It's Vivine Lozonga.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me on the show, too. I'm very appreciative.
Well, I am. It's been wonderful having you on the show. And thank you to our listeners. I welcome your suggestions or your comments on this or any of our shows. You can find links to all of our shows on Empower Radio and on our website, artasworship.net. Please come share your stories of Art as Worship on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/artasworship, or suggest an artist that we should interview. Listen in next week as we talk with another artist about their creative process and how it connects with their spiritual journey. May you have an inspired and creative week. Namaste.